Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, Text 26. Asiktamargam Gandhodai. Asiktamargam Gandhodai. Okay. Karinam Madashikarai. Karinam Madashikarai. Swaminam praptam alokya. Swaminam praptam alokya. Matamba sutaramiva. Matamba sutaramiva. Ashiktamargam gandodai. Karinam madashikarai. Swaminam praptam alokya. Matam basutaramiva. Vaishnavis. Ashiktamargam. The streets were sprinkled. Ganda udai. With perfume water. Karinam. Of elephants. Madasikarai. With particles of perfume liquor. Swaminam. The master or proprietor. Praptam, present. Alokya, seen personally. Matam, very opulent. Iva, sorry, va, either. Sutaram, highly. Iva, as if. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfume water and drops of perfumed liquor thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, They appreciated this opulence very much. We have simply heard about the opulence of Ram Raj during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. Now, here is one example of the opulence of the Lord's kingdom. The streets of Ayodhya were not only clean, but also sprinkled with perfume water and drops of perfume liquor, which were distributed by elephants through their trunks. There was no need of sprinkling machines, for the elephant has a natural ability to suck water through its trunk and again throw it out in a shower. We can understand the opulence of the city from this one example. It was actually sprinkled with perfume water. Moreover, the citizens had the opportunity to see the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the state. He was not a sleeping monarch, as we can understand from his activities in sending his brothers to see to the affairs outside the capital and punish anyone who did not obey the emperor's orders. This is called Digvijay, and I believe that was explained in the previous purport. Yeah, Prabhupada elaborated upon that in the previous purport. The citizens were all given facilities for peaceful life, and they were also qualified with appropriate attributes according to Vanashram. As we have seen from the previous chapter, Vanashram Gunanvita, the citizens were trained according to the Vanashram system. A class of men were Brahmanas, a class of men were Kshatriyas, a class were Vaishyas, and a class were Sudras. Without this scientific division, there can be no question of good citizenship. The king, being magnanimous and perfect in his duty, performed many sacrifices and treated the citizens as his sons. And the citizens, being trained in the Vanashram system, were obedient and perfectly ordered. The entire monarchy was so opulent and peaceful that the government was even able to sprinkle the street with perfume water. What to speak of other management? Since the city was sprinkled with perfume water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects. Why should the citizens not feel happy during the reign of Lord Ramachandra? Om Gina Timidam Dashajan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurna Militamiena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dattati Svapadantikam. So, as usual, there's a number of beautiful points that Prabhupada makes here in his purport that we could talk about. I think the first thing I'd like to talk about is this being sprinkled with perfume water. Prabhupada seemed to be pretty impressed by that. If you notice in the purport, he kind of repeated it quite a few times how he says here, we can understand the opulence of the city from this one example. It was actually sprinkled with perfume water. As it came up quite a few times in the purport. So he was impressed by that. And he makes the point here that he says, this perfume water was distributed by elephants through their trunks. There was no need of sprinkling machines. The elephant has a natural ability to suck water through its trunk and again throw it out in a shower. So he doesn't directly say it, but it also seems like Prabhupada's implying, just from the mood, that these natural arrangements are better. It's okay, it's good. You can do it with a machine for sprinkling water. That's nice. But it's even better if it's by a natural arrangement, which is the elephants sucking water from wherever and sprinkling it. And in general, that's the case. You know, natural arrangements are better. Krishna knows what he's doing. And that's one of the beauties of the Vedic cultures. It took advantage of so many different natural arrangements. And they had a better quality of life. You know, they had a better quality of life. You see, like now, it's life is so unnatural. And people are proud here in the West of their, you know, all the different types of arrangements we've made to, you know, so-called improvements. But really, the quality of life is less. People go, you know, they get up, they're in a building, and they get up and they go to another building. And then, I should be honest with you, I'm talking about myself. When I first came here to New Dwarka, I was kind of, at one point I was wondering what happened. I'd get up in the morning, I was in either the ashram or an apartment, and I'd come from there to the temple, and then I'd go from there to the airport. And after, like, you know, a while, I was wondering, where's all my energy going? What's happening, you know? I mean, I'm active and everything, But the thing is this, the human body is not meant to just go from one building to another building to another building and sit in one chair and then another chair and another chair and just breathe the same old stale air all day. You see? It's like, I mean, you can do that. You could practically do anything with the human body, but that ain't the best utilization of it. And in other words, like when you're out, and anyway, the way I counted, I started just walking and just getting outside a little bit and changed everything. But just in general, you know, people just, it's, the lifestyle is so artificial that, you know, it's sapping the vitality, the natural vitality of a human being. Anyway, Prabhupada seems to appreciate this, the natural arrangements. And I know myself, I could give more examples, but probably I move on. But every time I just go natural, as opposed to, like, if I'm going to exercise, I'm not going to go to some fitness, LA fitness thing down on Overland in Venice and pay money to get on some machine. For God's sake, just, you know, walk out the door, you know, and just go for a walk. Just, you know, walk over to the Kenneth Hahn Park. You know, it's so much more pleasant. It's so much more invigorating. It's just, I know, like, same thing, just like, even with eating, for instance, you know, sometimes, even experiences, even in Krishna consciousness, what to speak of once you get outside the devotional world, cooks, they feel impotent unless they could put a lot of salt, a lot of sugar, a lot of this and a lot of that on the food. And it might be good for the taste buds, but it's like, it's not good for the health. I always feel most happy and most safe, you know, when I can satisfy my hunger by, you know, getting a piece of nice ripe organic fruit or something like that. Why? Because Krishna knows what he's doing. Krishna knows what he's doing as far as feeding us goes. Krishna knew what he was doing as far as giving us air goes. You know, the fresh air is better than the stale air in a room that's not, you know, moving around. Krishna knows every, you know, we need sunlight. All these things, the natural arrangements are always going to be the best. They're always, you know, and there's one lecture where Prabhupada said, nature's, it was lecture Prabhupada was giving on the teachings of Queen Kunti, nature's way is Krishna's way. You see? So Krishna knows, and we just follow that, we're going to be happier and healthier. So I think, you know, as I said, Prabhupada didn't explicitly say that here, but I kind of, just from reading that sentence, got that sort of a feeling that he's kind of making that point again. You know, nature's way is Krishna's way. Okay? So that was that point. And another point here is, it's another point being made from the same information, is, so Prabhupada's saying here that, you know, he's very impressed. You know, he's saying from this one example, we can understand the opulence of Lord Ramachandra's kingdom, that, you know, the elephants were sprinkling water, perfume water, all over the streets. And he's, once again, he mentions this, there's no need for a sprinkling machine. So, just look at the, let's compare governments, okay? This was the Ram Raj. But, you know, from a Western perspective, this is something that happened hundreds and thousands of years ago, you know, primitive civilization, as far as they would be concerned. Let's look at what's happening here in this so-called primitive civilization. Not only did they have the streets cleaned, but the streets were sprinkled, not just with water, but with scented water, perfume water. You know, it must have been beautiful. You know, it must have been just like a wonderful experience just to walk down the nice, clean street of Ayodhya early in the morning when the sun's rising or something like that. So, but what on the contrary, what do we have today? If you wanted to, you know, say you were a very philanthropic, humanitarian kind of person, you thought, let me do something nice for the city of Bakersfield or the city of Fresno or the city of Sacramento, and let me just forget about elephants because, you know, that would be a no-no right away. But I'll get a sprinkling machine, and I'll drive down the main street of one of those cities, and I'll sprinkle the streets that have just been cleaned. And, it would be nice for everybody. You know, the streets would be nice and clean. You know, not only would you probably wouldn't get very far. You know, you probably, if you tried to do that now in 2015, and, you know, October of 2015, you probably not would get stopped, fined, possibly even arrested. Why? Because, you know, the governments now can't even get it together so that there's water. what to speak of water to sprinkle on the city streets. You know, the governments throughout the world, pretty much, and the United States as well, is right on, you know, right on target with it. Can't even get it to supply water, fresh water to the people for drinking. You know, that's not a problem yet, but we're getting there. Drinking, bathing, but it's you know, there's not even water. And it does have something to do with the government. I'm just going to give a little information on that, since the purport does kind of talk a little bit about water indirectly, because I did a little research on that. And I think it's Christian's arrangement. You know, Madhukar Prabhu, a friend of mine here, mentioned to me, like, yeah, he likes California, but he's thinking, I don't know if I could want to move here because you guys are running out of water. I said, come on now. You know, it ain't that bad. I mean, I don't read the news. I don't go on Google. I don't watch TV. I don't, you know, so I'm kind of uninformed in one sense. So I really don't know what's going on except for what I hear or what I see when I go out on the college campuses and stuff like that. I figure if anything serious enough is happening, I'll pick it up from other people. But so anyway, I picked it up. So I thought, well, let me check this out. So I did go on Google, and I just typed in No Water California. And get some information. And finally I got this one really good video where I got some good information. 71% of the Earth's surface is water, okay? But only 1% of that is potable water, you know, it's drinking water. And California, the state of California, 98% of the state is in need of water. And this is the fourth year of a record-breaking drought. The governor of the state issued some sort of an imperative back in March or April that all the cities in California should cut down their use of water by 25%. I don't know how they're trying to administer that, but anyway, you know, there's a thing that kids play on called slip and slide. It's been banned. No more slip and slides. You know, it's like a plastic sheet that they pour water on and the kids jump and I used to do it when I was a kid, you know. No more. You can't do those anymore. They're outlawed. Slip and slides are outlawed. You have to ask for water now when you go into a restaurant. You know, usually back in the old days, you sit down at a table and there's a glass of water there for everybody. Now you have to ask. And it was saying at one point it's not just California. It's the entire United States is in different parts is having a problem. And there's other countries that have a serious problem, such as Iran, Brazil, and United Arab Emirates. And the prince there, the crown prince of the United Arab Emirates, was saying that for us, water is more important than oil. That's how serious a problem it is there. And 2 billion people now, according to the some United Nations, I can't remember what it was, council or something, they said there's 2 billion people who are, like, not getting sufficient water on the face of the earth, and they're expecting it to rise to 4.6 billion by the year 2080. And their understanding of why is, well, it's global warming. You know, that's global warming. And there's this the little clip of the governor of California, Jerry Brown, and he made the comment, it's damn serious. You know, this is a damn serious problem. That's interesting language. But so the thing is this, though, that just to give I'll give a little bit more information, then I'll give the Krishna conscious analysis of this. There's something called aquifers. Aquifers is like water sources underneath the ground. And it was this particular information source was saying that 30% of the water we use is from these underground groundwater, you know, sources, aquifers. But one problem is once they run dry, that's it. There's no way of replenishing. It's like, you know, tapping into water that's been stored for a long, long, long time. And we're just, you know, using that and using very quickly, getting to the point of using it up. And it made the point that a tremendous amount of groundwater is contaminated by pesticides, you know, by the agricultural industries when they fly the planes over and put all sorts of pesticides over the crops. That gets into the groundwater and contaminates it, makes it no longer usable for, you know, drinking water or human purposes. And something called fracking. And fracking is a process where they use huge quantities of water, underground water, to blast out gas and oil. You see? So huge, and it specifically mentioned huge quantities of water, underground water, this, you know, water that could be used for human purposes, used for that thing. So then the video is saying, presenting solutions, what to do. Well, conserve water, okay. It mentioned desalinization, but it said that, well, that's a problem because it costs twice as much and it could hurt marine life. And then there's this little film clip, part of the video where Bill Gates was on there and he was saying, he issued a challenge to all engineers to come up with some sort of a device by which human waste, you know, waste products, could be transformed so that drinking, you know, clean water could be excreted from them. And then, of course, recycling water. But when I was thinking about those, I was thinking, you know, once again, it's just showing how inadequate the governments are because, okay, fracking. It mentioned about fracking using huge quantities of underground water to stop, to blast out gas. Stop them. What's the use of a government if it doesn't just take control? You know, is what's going to happen that all of a sudden we're just going to keep using this water, and one day you're going to turn on your tap and there's going to be no water, and then you're going to turn on the TV and the government, they're just going to go, well, sorry, the water's gone. But we don't need you guys to do that. We don't need you guys to tell us that. The whole purpose of the government is you take control. You're in control. So do something to deal with the situation, you see. But they don't. That's the problem. That's the problem of the Kali Yuga government. Because why? Because they're not actually, as you know, as Prabhupada says throughout the pages of the Bhagavatam and you know, and throughout his lectures, they're not. Their top priority is not the welfare of the people in general. Unfortunately, which is exactly what a government's supposed to be, and that's exactly what Lord Ramachandra's government was. That's what's being described in today's purport. This was a government that was concerned, Lord Ramachandra was concerned with the welfare of the people, the immediate material welfare of the people, and of course the ultimate spiritual welfare of the people. And therefore the citizens was like, they're loving it. Ram Raj, you know, he says, Prabhupada says, we've heard about the opulence of Ram Raj. People were in ecstasy being part of the government. And it mentions in the purport here that everybody was peacefully executing their occupational duties within the Vanashram system. Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras. Why? Because they knew we have a monarch here who's got his head together, you know. He's Krishna, well, in that case was Lord Ramachandra. But, you know, they were happy to perform the sacrifices involved in being part of whatever their, you know, ashram was or their nirvana was. Because they could understand it's not one way. It's not like we're being exploited, you know. It's like, it's reciprocal. We're sacrificing to perform these, you know, occupational duties, and there's, you know, reciprocation from the government. We're being looked after, and they were, but not the case now. Anyway, getting back to this point, so yeah, why doesn't the government do something? Why don't they just stop the fracking, and in that way save all that huge quantity of water? And it also mentions about the desalinization was twice as expensive as, you know, bringing in water from other places, or didn't say where. What are they talking about? But so what? You know, twice as expensive. So spend the money instead of spending like 50% of the national budget is spent on defense. It's like, you know, we're living in a madhouse, basically. You're living in a madhouse. Countries all over the world are spending 50% or more of their national budget on defense, which means weapons, military, right? Just to either fight each other or to protect themselves from being attacked by others who want to fight them. Meantime, the water's running out. So, you know, just turn the clock forward 50 years or 100 years, you're going to have a lot of countries with a lot of weapons, and everybody's going to die because there's no water. Ridiculous, you know. But somehow or another, we're just so much in the grips of Maya, or they are, you know, to that they can't understand. Well, let's stop. Is it possible that we could stop, not spend so much money on weapons and defense, and let's use that money and desalinize the water so we can have some water to drink, to bathe, and to grow our crops with. But somehow they can't get it to do that. And this other reason was it could hurt the marine life. Since when are they worried about hurting the marine life? You know, it's just so ridiculous. You know, there's boats that go out there that just throw out these huge nets on either side of the boat, and they just troll in any living thing that passes through them. You know, they're not worried about them. Since when are they great humanitarians and or not humanitarians, aquatarians or whatever you'd call it, worried about marine life? Anyway, but it goes. There's a philosophical point that could be understood from this, and which is this, that the real, they don't really know. They don't know the actual reason why this is all happening, why this, why there is this global warming and consequently droughts throughout a lot of parts of the world. We do, okay? And the reason is because they're demons. You know, human civilization is today demoniac, and Krishna is punishing the demons. And Prabhupada said as much in a lecture, and I'll just read an excerpt from a lecture where Prabhupada, gives us a clear understanding of why this is all happening and why, unless something changes, all these stopgap measures, even if they could get it together, which apparently they can't, to desalinize the water or stop the fracking, that still wouldn't do it. That still wouldn't do it. Why? Because they're engaged in sinful activity, because they're not performing jagya. You see? That's the real root cause of the problem, that they're not devotees of Krishna. They're acting sinfully. They're acting in a way that they're not supposed to be acting, and they're being punished by Mother Nature, which is under the control of Krishna. You see? So even if, as I said, even if they did get it together to stop the fracking and desalinize the water, but they still went on with their sinful activities of illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, Mother Nature would work out another way to punish him. Because they're meant to be punished. Anyway, I'll just read you this with Prabhupada, an excerpt from a lecture where Prabhupada basically says this much better than I just attempted to say it, and very clearly. He says, just like we are getting water, if somebody says, oh, what is that? It is coming from the water tank. So where is the question of paying taxes or rent? Prabhupada says, no. The water tank is being filled up by the municipality. If you don't pay tax, it will be cut off. Similarly, don't think that the water is coming as your father's property. No, you are becoming debtor. You are becoming debtor. Therefore, if you don't pay debts, if you don't perform sacrifices, is making the analogy, then there will be scarcity of water. And one day it will come, there will be no water. That you expect. Because you are not paying any tax. You are thinking, water is coming, my father's property. No. Your father's property, that's all right, but you are not your father's son at the present moment. You are Maya's son. You don't care for your father. Therefore, Father said, Maya Jakshana Pakrate Suyate Sacharachanam. Krishna says, the Supreme Father, he's the Supreme Father. You don't care for Father. The nature is working under the direction of the Supreme Father. That's a fact. So if you do not care for your father, then the result will be nature will reduce supply. This is exactly what's happening. Human civilization, human Prabhupada, they don't care for the father. So nature is working, as Prabhupada says here, under Krishna's direction. Nature is reducing supply. Reduce supply, he says. Nature will not allow the demons to flourish. That's it. Yeah, so they might be mystified and scratching their heads. What's the reason? Why is this happening? Or whatever. We're totally clear. We're just totally clear. Yep, here it is. Prabhupada just said it. Nature will not allow the demons to flourish. That's exactly the reason why this whole problem and all the other problems are happening. Because nature's not allowing the demons to flourish. Prabhupada goes on. That is not allowed. The demons are always liable to be punished. Some big, big demons like Ravana, Hiranyakasipu, the Lord personally comes to punish them. Otherwise, the ordinary demons, they are punished by the laws of nature. So that's contemporary human society, ordinary demons. So they're just going to get punished by the laws of nature. Krishna does not require to come to punish these petty demons. But when there is big, big demons like Ravana, like Hiranyakasipu, like Kamsa, then Krishna or Lord Ramachandra, they come to punish them. So as long as people continue to be demons, they're going to get punished, right? So now we know the cause of the problem, right? People aren't being devotees. So now what's the solution? The solution is they have to become devotees, and that's where we come into the picture. we have to try to help them become devotees. As mentioned in the previous purport, yesterday's purport, it says here that Lord Ramachandra showed his favor to his brothers by ordering them to go out. Many of the Lord's devotees residing in Vrindavan have taken the vow not to leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness. But the Lord says that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world, in every village, in every town. That is the open order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A pure devotee, therefore, must execute the order of the Lord and must not gratify his senses by remaining stagnant in one place, falsely proud, thinking that because he does not leave Vrindavan or New Dwarka or whatever the case may be, you know, but chants in a solitary place, he's become a great devotee. A devotee must carry out the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yade deke tadakata Krishna Vadesh. Every devotee, therefore, should spread Krishna consciousness by preaching, asking whomever he meets to accept the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says, Sarvadamam parichaja mami kam saranam braja. And it goes on. Everyone, yeah. So, yeah, that's where we come into the picture. Everybody's, you know, supposed to try to do that. And so we've heard this before, of course. And it's always good to hear it again. But I just wanted to say something this morning, and I got 5 minutes so I could do it, to try to help everybody do this. Does anybody that disagree that this is what we're supposed to be doing? I mean, Prabhupada clearly says it here. He says, many devotees have taken the vow to reside, never to leave Vrindavan and preach to preach Krishna, not to leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness, but the Lord says that this should be spread all over the world. Open up. Anyway, he's basically saying it's like, you know, all devotees should do this, okay? But it's a challenge. It's hard. I mean, preaching is challenging. It's not a cakewalk. You know, it takes some resolve, some determination to get out there and do it. But so I want to offer a suggestion how it can be done and to make it easier for everybody. And this is something I'm saying from personal experience over the last few months. Okay, I've been going out with Jai Kush, Bhakta Jai Kush on Sankirtan, and mostly I think it's due to Vijay's association, we started working from behind a table about 3 months ago. And at first, we tried it, and it didn't work, and then we abandoned it, and we went back to just kind of going around and, you know, approaching people one-on-one. Then somehow or another, we got back into it, and maybe with a better start. You know, we did it a little bit more. We did something right the next time. Anyway, somehow or another, we start, and we've been getting better and better results. And I'll show you what we do. Okay, a simple thing here. This is exactly what we do, okay? We go onto a college campus, and we plunk down a table, you know, in a good spot, and then we just take this sign, just like this. Ratna Bhushan made us this sign from some board that Mahanta had down in the Prashanam room, which is still there. And we just plunk the sign over the corner of the table, and we stand there. He sits there. And people come over. Students come over. And they're the best ones. You know, it's just like students come over. And this is really good because, you know, it's not a lie. We do have a book there in case they do want a free book. You know, sometimes they immediately come over and they say, are these free? And we say, well, this one's free. And these ones we ask for a donation. So, that, you know, right off the bat, there's no confusion about the whole thing. And you know, and some students come over, and some students are, you know, it's easy to get them to come over the temple. You just, like I have the temple invitation card there, and I just flap it. I just stand there and go, you know, hey, meditation, you know. It's like, here, kitty, you know, something like that. And as soon as they look at you, you just go here. And they take the card, and I immediately say, so what's your major? And whatever they say, I say, you qualify, come on over. You know, whatever they say, they're qualified. And then you just bring them over and you hand them a book. And anyway, it's so much easier. And the table gives you immediate, you could sense it. Because I've been doing this other method for over 40 years. You know, going like, approaching people, just kind of boom, just hitting. And I could see that people are more comfortable coming over to a table. They feel like you're legit. You know, they feel like, oh, these guys must belong here because, look, they're at a table. I mean, for God's sake, you know, they got a sign, they're at a table. They must be okay to be here. But when you just, you know, approach somebody, you know, you're a total stranger, they're a total stranger, it's like, it's not something that happens. In this country, that's not how people do business. You know, they don't conduct business like that. Maybe in other countries there's a bit more of that, I don't know. But here in America, people are used to, if they want something, they're used to going into a store or something, a shop to buy it. So it's kind of like there's a bit of awkwardness always there. You know, some people might even be scared, you know, what's going on here, even though it's middle of the day, you know. Some people, they're frightened, it's unusual. So this is, it really minimizes that. And they just come right up, a lot of them, you know, and they go, hey, what's happening? What's it all about, you know? And then you just do your thing. So everybody could try this, is what I'm getting at. It's a way that you can do book distribution that's less intimidating for you, you know, easier. And hopefully, you know, if you tried the other kind of book distribution and you weren't comfortable with it for some reason or another, and I can understand that, maybe this might work for you. You know, this could work for you. We haven't experimented a lot in places other than schools. You know, pretty much we've just been doing it at schools. But, you know, I think it's got potential. We haven't done it yet. I know that even on the promenade, you could do Santa Monica Promenade. Apparently, you could have a table if it has wheels. So you could, somebody, you know, that's a possibility for the Harinam parties. You could just have a table that has wheels, you know, and you could have the sign on it. And this helps a lot, too, by the way, because, you know, free. That brings people over. And then we're not lying to them, as I said, because we do have a book there that, you know, we can give them for free. So so I guess I'll stop there, 8:15. Anybody have any questions? You have one here.
When you're sitting there, it's like you're helpless. You know, are they going to come over to you? Are they just going to walk by? You know, and so it really forces you. And I have so many people. I don't want to brag, but people come up to me saying, "Wow, you look so peaceful. This stuff must really work." You know, and I'm full of anxiety because I'm afraid that I'm not going to distribute any books that day. You know, but so and then also what's really good about it is people who come, they come repeatedly. Because they know where you are, and they're looking for you. And they say, are you going to be on campus next week? You know, and so they want to make sure there's a station where they can come back and get another book. And people come back and say, oh, I got that book. Which one should I get this time? Or they come and they, even I had one boy, I remember he would come and stand in front of the table and distribute the books himself. You know, and I'd just be like, okay, let him do it. You know, because he loved his book so much. So it's a really wonderful thing, the book table. I really think it helped my meditation. You know, it helped me to be more peaceful, me personally.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Touch a nerve, Prabhu. I'm presenting this. I'm hoping other devotees will try it. You know, there's that expression, many hands make light work, some Chinese expression. So, yeah, you know, if you kind of hear this and you feel like maybe I could do that type of sankirtan, let me know. Let's try it because you know, even if you go out and just do it in a small way and you like it, and anyway, we got a lot of devotees in this community, and if everybody does a little bit, then that adds up to a lot. Yeah, Bruce, sorry.
Yeah, I've been doing table for like 2 years already, but without the sign. And definitely it's not the same. And you probably done that too, without the sign.
Without the sign.
It doesn't work the same.
Sign works better.
Exactly. So I was just skeptical a little bit about the top line, free, and I was thinking, am I deceiving? So I'm reconsidering, given the point that you can have some small books and
yeah.
Say that. And then that will be, but I wasn't comfortable with that.
Yep, I mean, perfection of yoga is...
Okay,
they, you know?
So it works.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Question now. The highlight oh, Srila Prabhupada's purport there, it's awesome, it's beautiful. And then you make the opposite, you know, of what we're going through now in modern society. And then you also mentioned that at one point, if the authorities or the government says, okay, sorry, there's no more water, and then, what? And you were mentioning it, like, what is that? What are you saying?
What's the use of that kind of government?
So
that government,
now I was thinking in a question that, similarly, we have the philosophy. We got the best philosophy. If someone would say, I hear you guys, it's really good. Now, if you will have 1,000 people coming right now to join, what would you do? Or 10,000 people joining? How will you accommodate them to? Are we ready to accommodate?
Well, I mean, on some level, no. I mean, we don't have accommodation for them. You know, we could tell them, we could instruct them. So, I mean, we could, you know, accommodate them in that sense. We could give them good instruction. We could tell them, chant Hare Krishna, follow the four other principles. I mean, we couldn't give them a place to live and, you know, food to eat necessarily, et cetera, like that. But we could instruct them. So at least we're prepared that much.
But could you say that if we will have options, like, you know, Prabhupada said 50% of my work was done, but there's other 50 still to be done.
Yeah, we could do a lot better. I mean, it'd be better if we did have, you know, say, oh, yeah, okay, chant Hare Krishna, follow the four good principles. Are you ready to do that full on? Okay, then you can also go here and, you know, send them to this farm or that farm. We're not that organized yet, but we could instruct them. So that's something. And that's pretty significant. But, yeah, there's a lot of room, a lot of work. We're a work in progress, you know. We're a work in progress, which is, you know, but still, we've done. Anyway, we've made a lot of progress, and there's still a lot more to be done. Yeah, Mata, in the back.
Thank you for a very nice class. I heard your comment that book distribution is challenging, but actually it's very blissful. It's very, very, like, I can't imagine any other service which I've done in a experience such a bliss. Like my Gurudev, His Grace Vaisheshik Das says, book distribution is actually fun and easy. And it's true. It's challenging if you go to the areas where people are kind of very hard. When I go to Spanish areas, for example, it's very blissful. Every person take a book, and that really makes you blissful because you see all of these people are taking books, and this is amazing. I want to go out more. And the biggest challenge actually is just stepping first steps and going out, you know, like getting ready and going out. I'm going. But otherwise, it's absolutely blissful. Suggest every person.
We're glad to hear you're having such a positive experience. Just to wrap it up, just so somebody wants to try this, once again, practically speaking, you might be able to twist Ratna Bhushan's arm and get him to make a sign for you, because the material is right down there in the prasadam room. It belongs to Mahanta. It's been sitting there for months. It's just this board there. And he did this one for us in a matter of hours, actually. He has all the equipment. You can get a table at Target, $27. It's a table. It's about 2.5 foot by 4 foot. It folds down the middle. You know, it's lightweight. You can carry it. And you can pick up a cart for $17 at this place, Office Supply Place, on just off of Jefferson and Sawtelle. You're all set and ready to go. You got your table. You got your little thing to pull it with. And you got your sign here. And you can try it. Yes, Vasprabhu.
Before they do that, not okay. That there's, you know, free for all, and whoever you are, whatever you are, whatever you do, if they would at least come to the temple and talk to us first, where they're going, why they're doing, get the books, things of that nature.
Okay, so if you're hearing this on the internet or if you're out here or whatever, just contact us first and we'll try to help you. Yes, Prabhu, last comment or question. And we'll
thank you so much, Prabhu. Prabhu, when you go to college with this setting, I'm guessing that you wear casual clothes. If that's the case, if somebody asks you who are you and why do you do it, how do you introduce yourself? Introduce yourself as monks or what?
You just say, no, we're a non-profit religious organization, and you know, we do this on all the campuses because, you know, First Amendment right, free speech and religion. So we just put ourselves here in the free speech area. And they say, well, this is not the free speech area. You got to first go check in and you got to give, oh, sorry, okay, where do we go? And there's, you know, there's that expression, it's easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission. So that's, I mean, Vijay kind of works along that idea. And he just goes and sets up, and usually it's no problem. And if there's a problem, well, they can just come out and tell you, well, you know, you can't be doing this here, or you can't do it all, you know, whatever. Then you deal with it. And obviously you're just cooperative from that point onwards, but that's how kind of how we've been doing it, and hopefully that seems to be working. Some places you do have to kind of check in first, and you even have to pay money. There's one school we go to, they want, even just to set up in the free speech area, we have to pay them $25 each time. But it's well worth it. It's that much more effective that it's worth, even if sometimes if they pay a nominal amount of money like that, just to get the permission to do it. Okay, so thank you very much. Kuntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Some drought, and this is the fifth year of a serious drought. Well, I didn't read it, but according to